News, I'm Ben Kiefer. In the wake of last week's shooting in South Carolina, Iowa churches are rethinking their security. They're also asking police for help. Two Cedar Rapids churches have reached out to that city's police department, according to a report in the Des Moines Register, asking officers to review their emergency plans, possibly provide additional active shooter training. Similar conversations happening in other churches in Iowa, the Des Moines Faith Missionary Baptist Church, for instance. We have a couple people joining us to discuss the national conversation that has been sparked by this tragedy in Charleston. Arnold Woods Jr. is with us. He's a deacon at that church, the Faith Missionary Baptist Church in Des Moines. Also, the Des Moines leader of the NAACP, Arnold Woods, Deacon Woods. So welcome to our program. Are you there? We'll try to resolve that issue. There, now we can hear you. Arnold Woods, are you there?
Yes, I am here, and good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. Excuse our little technical hiccup there. And I want to welcome our other guest for this half hour. Richard Brent Turner is a professor of African-American religious history at the University of Iowa in our Iowa City studio. Professor Turner, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And we want to reach out to you, our listeners, this half hour. What do the Charleston church shooting and the debate over the Confederate flag tell you about how our country is dealing with racism, our history? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, where you can leave a comment or a question, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Arnold Woods, I understand that your church had just finished up with your own open door Wednesday night worship service shortly before the news broke of the Charleston killings last week. Tell us about your initial reaction of that horrible news.
Well, our reaction, of course, is one of prayer. The first thing you do when something like this happens, especially from a Christian perspective, is to get on your knees and pray. So that was our response. We are certainly in mourning with the people of the congregation and South Carolina, and feel their pain. You can't help but feel pain when life is lost, regardless of where it happens at, but especially in a place that you consider to be reserved for a place of comfort and reflection of God and His mercies.
Mm-hmm. When the accused shooter was brought before the court, we heard, and this was a surprise to many, I think, forgiveness being offered, given to the accused shooter from immediate family members who had lost loved ones. Does this surprise you?
No. I mean, scripturally, we're told in Matthew 5 and 44 that we should love our neighbors. But verse 44 also says that we should pray for those who despitefully do things against us or our enemies who would cause us harm. So we live by that creed and have no problem with forgiveness. That is within the nature of Jesus Christ. If not, we would not be able to withstand the rigors of this world, because we are born into a world of sin. When we get here, we are sinful by nature, and only Jesus Christ can change that nature and change us from carnal to spiritual.
Richard Brent Turner, let me turn to you as a professor of African-American religious history. Place this shooting in context of our nation's history.
I'd like to say, first of all, that I'm an African-American man. I was born in the AME church. You know, I was christened in an AME church in Boston as an infant. But I think that the shooting has a larger significance in terms of systemic racism in this country, because here we had a young white supremacist, Dylan Roof, who walked into an AME church on June 17th, and he killed the following innocent people: Clementa Pinckney, Cynthia Hurd, Sharonda Coleman Singleton, Tawanza Sanders, Ethel Lance, Susie Jackson, DePayne Middleton Doctor, Reverend Daniel Simmons, Myra Thompson. And he picked Emmanuel AME Church for a specific reason. He wanted, in his words, to start a race war, because he said to some of the people that he shot, "You're taking my country away from me." But the AME Church is certainly a church that goes back to the very early roots of the United States as a country. It was established by Richard Allen in 1794 in Philadelphia. He was an ex-slave. He was a Methodist Episcopal minister, and he took a bunch of black people out of St. George's Methodist Episcopal Church in Philadelphia because of their opposition to slavery and segregation in this church. And Emmanuel AME Church was picked by this murderer because he understood that it had a deep history connected to enslavement of blacks in the South. It was established in 1816 in Charleston. And in 1822, Denmark Vesey, who was an ex-slave, he had bought his way out of slavery, planned a slave rebellion with other members of Emmanuel Church. He was found out, and he and 34 other blacks who had planned the slave rebellion, which was a precursor to the Civil War, were hung. And the white citizens of Charleston burned Emmanuel AME Church down to the ground in protest against that. Yet this thing of burning black churches is not, unfortunately, an isolated development, even in the 20th century. Because, of course, we have the historic bombing of 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama, in which four innocent black girls were killed while they were preparing for Sunday school. And that was done by Klan's people who wanted to stop the progress of the civil rights movement. In the 1990s, 225 black churches were burned down in this country, in various parts of the United States. President Clinton had to put together a commission to get on this, to figure out why this was happening, who was doing it. In 2008, a white man burned down a black church in Springfield, Massachusetts, my home state of Massachusetts. And he did this on the day that Barack Obama was elected president of the United States. And Charleston is just a very, very important city to understand this framework of systemic racism, because it is a city where thousands of black people were sold on slave blocks. And also, it's a city at the present time where there are a lot of, economic and political inequities between blacks and white citizens.
You've listed many attacks here, so this is not unique, Richard. What does this tell you about how our country is dealing with its racist past in the present?
Well, it tells us that we're at a troubled point in terms of systemic racism in this country, because this is something that's larger than the goodwill of white individuals, black individuals, Hispanic individuals, or Asian individuals. It's built into our structures through several hundred years of slavery, through Jim Crow from 1896 to 1964. And now we're in a period of time when there have been an amazing number of police shootings of unarmed black men from 2012 to 2015. And these, I believe, are connected to this these shootings of these innocent black people.
How?
Because, if policemen who were supposed to be trusting with our security are just shooting black men and boys in the back in public events, and in some cases they're getting away with it, of course this sends a signal to white supremacists, to, like this guy, who he may have been a lone wolf, but, he was embracing the Confederate flag. He was calling on Rhodesia and apartheid in South Africa as one of his rallying points. And we've had an amazing number of these shootings, from Trayvon Martin in 2012, Ernest Satterwhite in 2014, Dontre Hamilton, Eric Garner in 2014, John Crawford III, Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri last summer, LeVar Jones, Tamir Rice, who was only 12 years mm-hmm. old, in Cleveland. And of course, there was a shooting of Walter Scott in North Charleston, South Carolina, this very year.
Richard Brent Turner with us, professor of African-American religious history at the University of Iowa. Also Arnold Woods, Jr., a deacon at Faith Missionary Baptist Church in Des Moines, Des Moines leader of the NAACP. Let me ask what I mentioned of you, Arnold Woods, at the beginning of this. Do you think that this incident has you at your church? Should churches, black churches in particular, in Iowa be rethinking their security? Are you doing it? Have you done it?
Well, let me agree with the professor first. I do believe that we are in a situation now. We have to go all the way back to when President Obama was elected and the deference to helping the president run this country in a smooth and just way. The opposition parties' initial comments about doing everything they could to bring the president down and give him one term. That sends a message out to the rest of the world, rest of the country, and the world within itself. That particular message that was sent out could have definitely had an impact on the way people think and behave in this country today.
But there was no indication that it was for anything other than political reasons that they wanted him to be a one-term president.
Everything is political. Everything is political from my perspective. So I only said that to say that we can make ourselves better by the way we respond to people and the way that we offer our comments. And my comment was meant as not as saying that the Congress is a hateful Congress. My comment was meant to say that we as a country need to learn to work together for good. That can push hate to the side. We should be trying to do things for this country that helps everybody, not just a special group. Mm-hmm. As far as our church is concerned, most churches in this country, we've always been mindful of security, especially our historical black churches. In our particular congregation, we have a mixed congregation for our Vacation Bible School that we're running this week. We recognize most of the people who are coming, and those who are not, who we do not recognize, are coming with someone that we do recognize. So our security or our policing ourselves is somewhat passive. We're not doing anything overt to show that we are carrying guns or anything. We're not doing anything like that. We're basically being more alert, being attentive to our surroundings. We're making sure that our doors are locked when they're not in use. That type of a thing is what we're doing rather than anything that's really overt that would cause tension within our congregation.
As we speak, gentlemen, the state legislature in South Carolina is debating the removal of the flag. The governor of South Carolina requested that they do this from the state house territory there, the Confederate flag. Does this, Richard Brent Turner, as a historian, give you a sense that some good is coming out of this latest attack, this horrific shooting at the church?
Well, I hope some good comes out of it, but the removal of the Confederate flag from the state capitol in South Carolina is long overdue, but it doesn't delve into the deeper systemic issues of structural racism in this country and economic inequalities and police shootings of innocent black people. We just finished in this country a major urban uprising in Baltimore in April over the police killing of Freddie Gray. And we now have a whole new generation of civil rights activists. They're in the Black Lives Matter movement. And their motto, and they say it's a very simple one, and it is our demand is simple: stop killing us. And how does that happen? How does that happen when we have our policemen who are supposed to protect us, shooting black youth and black men who are unarmed?
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, as an African-American man, and also you, Deacon Woods, in a moment, the Confederate flag, what does it mean to you? I asked our senator, Senator Grassley, last half hour, what do you feel like growing up, living your life in a country with a Confederate flag?
Well, I grew up in Boston, Massachusetts, and I grew up in a historic black community, Roxbury. We were a self-contained black community in the city of Boston, so I never saw a Confederate flag until I moved to New Orleans to take a position as a professor in 1996. I lived in New Orleans for 3 years. I saw lots of Confederate flags, and the Confederate flag reminded me that at least in New Orleans, people did not respect the history of black people in this country. I mean, my ancestors were enslaved in North Carolina. And the Confederate flag is a reminder of me, to me, of slavery, of killing, of black people, of owning human beings, and a segment of our history that went on from the 1600s until the end of the Civil War in 1865, which is not a good one, which should not be celebrated through a Confederate flag, which represented a group of people in different states who seceded from the United States, and in doing that caused the Civil War, in which hundreds of thousands of Americans were murdered on battlefields, were killed on battlefields, including, you know, thousands of black people who are fighting for their freedom.
And you don't buy the argument that it can be seen as a memorial to those who died also in the Confederacy fighting in a Civil War? Just as that, not as a racist symbol?
I don't see it as I see it as a very unpatriotic symbol that represents separatism, and it represents to me, for those people who want to fly it, some of the wealthiest people in the United States who inherited plantation money. They continue to be very wealthy in cities like Charleston and New Orleans because they have passed on money from the ownership of human beings from generation to generation in the 21st century. And the flying of the Confederate flag, to me, indicates that we need to look deeply into the roots of systemic racism, how it is interwoven into our system of who accumulates wealth, where that wealth comes from, why people, see a flag that actually was not about the United States, but was about another country that separated from the United States and attempted to maintain slavery as a perpetual part of our democracy. We have to look at the deeper roots of all of these things, and our political officials, both black and white, and our leaders, both black and white, need to deliver to us, and I'm saying to African Americans and white Americans, changes in these systems of inequalities that are bedeviling us right now, and that result in these horrific murders in Charleston, South Carolina.
Richard Brent Turner with us of the University of Iowa, where he's professor of African-American religious history. Arnold Woods, let me get your thoughts before we finish up this conversation in less than 5 minutes about the Confederate flag controversy springing from the massacre last week.
Thank you. Yes, I have a rich history dealing with civil rights. My grandfather, and I mean my grandfather, was in the Navy in the Civil War. My grandfather was born in 1844. He was born a slave, and he fought in the Civil War. Most folk in my family have been in the military from myself back to my grandfather, to my father, to my brothers and my sisters. So it touches me deeply that we still have a Confederate flag flying anywhere in this country other than a museum or in a historical perspective.
What do you see? What are your thoughts when you see a Confederate flag?
I think about the 500,000 people that died during the Civil War to make this country a single country rather than two separate countries. So it hurts me to my gut that the flag is still flying anywhere in this country. It represents the worst part of America. There's no place for it on top of any state building nor federal building anywhere in this country.
Richard Brent Turner, we talked about church security. You attend church in Iowa City. Do you have concerns about security at your church? I understand there was a police presence there this Sunday.
There was a police presence at my church, Bethel AME Church, on Friday. There was a healing service there, so there was one policeman I believe, in the church, and, you know, the police car was parked outside of the church. But I want to make one more remark about this Confederate flag, because for thousands of African Americans, maybe even more than that, the Confederate flag also represents the era of lynchings in which the Ku Klux Klan burned and thousands of black people at the stake and lynched them throughout the South and the Midwest. And for me, there's a personal history there. My grandfather in North Carolina's brother was lynched in the early 20th century. And that's one of the reasons why my parents, decided during World War II to move from North Carolina, where our family had roots for at least a couple hundred years, to Boston, Massachusetts. So the Confederate flag is also tied to a very, very horrible history of Nazi-like people who are members of white supremacist groups who actually have done horrific crimes to thousands of black people. Some of the names we know, some of the names we'll never know.
Okay. We have just a few seconds left. Arnold Woods, you're good at inspiring people. What inspiration can we seek now as we look toward the future?
Once again, we have to be a forgiving people, and we are a forgiving people. We actually are a forgiving country. So my words of advice to all of us is to try to live together in harmony as brothers and sisters. We still deal with MLK and his desire for all of us to live together as brothers and sisters so we can all join hands in this great country and be one. I cling to that and believe that it is possible as we move towards another year. We just hope this new year, I only say new year because our national NAACP convention is in a couple of weeks.
Okay, we have to go. Arnold Woods, Jr., deacon at Faith Missionary Baptist Church and the Des Moines leader of the NAACP. Thank you, sir, for being with us.
Thank you.
As well as Professor Richard Brent Turner of the University of Iowa, thank you for your thoughts as well.
Thank you.
River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Politics Wednesday tomorrow. Hope you'll join us for that.